Taylor Decker's on my all 22 fantasy team.
Stop. They don't care.
So the strategic component to this game is through the roof.
Your predictions, right? Your forecasting in fantasy football into how good is this player?
This is going to, it's going to change the industry.
Yeah. I moved to the old town where it goes down. Look at me now. I wrote my goals down. I hold it down. Made myself proud. Say, look at me now.
What's up, everyone? Congratulations. This is the All 22 Podcast, and we are full of champions on the show. How many of you out there? One, I think last time we said it was probably around 80% of our listeners are league champions. I think that rate got even higher this week. So congratulations to everybody that won the championship game in the All 22 League. I'm very excited for you.
I'm pretty sure the math completely just disagrees with everything you just said, but that's okay.
We're up to 85%. Ray, did you win any championships in all 22?
I went 1-for-3 in my championship games.
Okay.
So it's a Hall of Fame batting average. Thought I could do better. Micah Parsons didn't have a good game week 17, of course. Cowboys got blown out. That hurt me quite a bit in a pretty close game. But yeah, 1-for-3 in championships is not bad. I guess I'll take it. I think 3-for-8 overall. So yeah, is what it is.
So, hey, you're part of that 85%.
Yeah, not every at-bat can be a home run, you know?
That's right. Not everyone can. We are here today to talk about a few things. Well, I guess, Happy New Year, everyone, right? We didn't even say that. Happy New Year. It's 2025. This is the first episode of 2025. Very exciting stuff. But we are at the end of the season, right? The season's over. So it's time to kind of reflect and review what players kind of make our all 22 first team, second team, third team, right? Like this is, we're here. I can't believe it, Ray. Cannot believe it.
I can. Time flies when you're having when you're having fun, and time certainly did fly. We had a lot of fun, but I'm excited about this. You know, it's like, again, kind of like last episode. I think it was last episode when I was trying to give some life advice about the right time for certain things, kind of like a metaphor for life here, right? It's new year. We reflect on what worked last year, and we have hope and optimism abound for how we can improve this coming year in 2025. So please go, plow through. Is it Quitting Friday? I think the second Friday of every new year, of every January is like quit day when everybody like dumps their New Year's resolutions. Don't do that. Stick with it. Stick with the plan, and you'll be better on the other side for it. So let's jump in.
Did you make any New Year's resolutions?
I have a few. It's not necessarily like resolutions. It's more like do this good thing more often. Like do more yoga, Ray. Like keep doing more yoga. That was like a resolution a couple years ago, and I kind of stuck with it a bit, and then it fell off. Gonna get back to it. Just do more yoga. Be a little more flexible. Relaxing.
Love that. Yeah. So like I'm not like a sweets guy. I don't like candy. I don't typically just go out of my way to eat candy. But like Christmas, New Year's, and like even like Thanksgiving kind of, right? It kind of just kind of carried over where I just got in this weird habit of it'd be like 8:30 at night and my wife would be like, yeah, you want a piece of chocolate? And I'd be like, all right, Chris, you want a piece of this? Yeah, all right. And like I would just found myself, I found myself eating a bunch of candy that I typically don't do. So my goal is after dinner, I'm done eating. We'll see if I stick to that. But that is my resolution, at least during the week.
Yeah. During the week, there's 52 weekends a year. That's still a lot of time that's a lot of cheat time.
Dude, if I want a piece of chocolate on a Saturday night, I'm going to have a piece of chocolate on a Saturday night. So
you
all right?
You're just dipping your toe in the water. You're not going all in.
Dude, I'm going
we're in. We're off to a great start. It's January 2nd.
I'm going in. All right.
Compromises.
We are going to go through, right? I'm going to read off the people that finished first, second, and third by position, and then we'll talk about like surprises, stuff like that. All right. But I think what we did with the quarterback position is we ended the debate of who should be MVP. I don't know if you realize that we did that, Ray, but every time we make a post, right? If it's a Lamar Jackson post, everybody is Lamar's MVP, right? We make a Joe Burrow post, Joe Burrow's MVP. Make a Josh Allen post, Josh Allen is MVP. I'm here to tell you today that Lamar Jackson finished first at quarterback with 128.4 points on the season, a 92.9 PFF grade. He is our QB1 for 2024 season. The debate is settled. Joe Burrow actually finished second, just below him, 127 points. And Josh Allen was third with 123 points. So those guys did finish 1, 2, 3 for us. But Lamar was the top. He took the crown. But there were a few guys that I wanted to kind of like talk about after that too. So, you know, I know you're not the biggest Justin Herbert guy. Justin Herbert finished fourth. Sam Darnold finished fifth. Mahomes was sixth. Geno Smith seven. So interesting kind of like mix here. I know that Mahomes kind of had a tough year, mostly because he didn't really have receivers for most of the year. So I think that kind of put a lot of pressure on what he was doing. So he finished outside of that top three. I don't really expect that to continue every year. I don't think this is like a sign of regression. It's just a difficult year. He relies on his defense a little bit more because he has a really good defense and he can do that. So Patrick Mahomes is sixth. But what stood out to you?
So a couple of names overlap there. Obviously, Lamar, number one. Lamar owner here, proud of that. He's the one who got me to my championship. But also Jaden Daniels. I'm just thinking of a scenario here where if you had a rookie draft this past spring or summer and you selected Jaden Daniels, perhaps you were coming off a really poor 2023 season. You're picking, let's say, fourth overall in your rookie draft, and you need a quarterback, and maybe you missed out on Caleb and perhaps May, or you know, you're taking the second quarterback, and to you that's Jaden Daniels. Jaden Daniels finished 10th on the platform among quarterbacks, 10th highest scoring quarterback, a rookie that was projected to be kind of boom or bust and a bit up and down. So imagine being on a bad team, missing out on Caleb Williams, drafting Jaden Daniels high, and now you get a top 10 season out of a 23, now 24-year-old player that you basically struck gold in that regard. So while, again, if it's a 12-team league, he's not necessarily a league-winning quarterback, because he's 10th out of, you know, presumably 12 starters, he changes the course of your franchise. So while, yeah, not a league winner, this is a rookie that you now, bam, that's your cornerstone right there. And again, it doesn't mean he's not going to go through the sophomore slump that we see quite a bit, and most great quarterbacks have to sort of go through as the league adjusts. But yeah, Jaden Daniels stood out to me because he can really now change the fortunes of an all 22 franchise pretty quickly.
I drafted him in a startup draft as my QB2. Dak Prescott got hurt, so he ended up being my QB1. And I still finished 4-11 or 4-whatever it was because Michael Parsons was hurt the whole year. So while it probably saved a lot of people, I was not one of them. All right, let's go to running back. Bijan Robinson is our first team all 22 player. 91.5 season grade, 31.6 points. He actually tied in points with Josh Jacobs, who is second on the list, who has a slightly lower PFF grade at 91.1. But I don't think Josh Jacobs gets nearly the credit that he should, especially with what he's doing in Green Bay. You know, I'm a Packer fan. I watch them every week, and I see how much the Packers rely on him to just be that consistent bell cow. And he's done a fantastic job of that. I think he needs to get a lot more hype in terms of best running back in the league conversation. Derrick Henry is third on the list, 92.5, 31.5 points. But yeah, it was a great year for those guys. I think there were a lot of guys on the list that did well. I mean, Saquon is towards the top of this list as well. But there was nothing really that surprised me here. I don't know if you disagree.
There was nothing that surprised me, but I guess there's one name that surprised me, which was James Conner. I think being up there fourth in grade, if I'm not mistaken, I don't have it in front of me, of course. I just flipped the page. But James Conner was up in the top group of running backs as well, which kind of then I take a look at James Conner, Derrick Henry, Saquon Barkley. Now, guys like Henry and Saquon don't necessarily attribute their success to this phenomenon in particular, but look at their quarterbacks, Lamar, Kyler, Hurts. Those are mobile quarterbacks, which we've spoken about this before, opens up the run game, gives you more space to work with because of the threat of the quarterback run and their legs. So that just kind of makes things a bit easier on them. And so three of the top five backs on the platform here also have the benefit of a mobile quarterback. I think that says something as well when you're really looking at running back situation. If you miss out on the no-brainer guys like a Bijan, for example, or even though Gibbs isn't on this top list, he's one of the first few to usually go in drafts as well. I think that's something you can look to take advantage of if you miss out on a top guy, is who can take advantage of a mobile quarterback in the run game. James Conner, no one talks about him. back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons. Now, he's going to be 30. I'm not sure this is going to, you know, they drafted Trey Benson. So are they turning over the reins to him at running back following this season? But the Kyler Murray, Lamar Jackson, Jalen Hurts effect moving forward is something you might be able to take advantage of at the running back position if you don't get one of those tippity-top names at the position. Tippity-top. I can't believe that came out like that, but we'll roll with it.
Yeah, that was pretty surprising, and I think it goes pretty unnoticed. Like you said, back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons is very impressive. I think Bijan being at the top of this list as well might surprise some people, not because people don't think he's great. Everybody knows he's great, but he hasn't yet, right? He hasn't had that year where you're like, wow, he put up, like Saquon's doing right now, right? Like 2,000 yards, and it doesn't have to be 2,000 yards, but even like a 1,500-yard rushing season, he hasn't really done that yet. So I think people might be surprised to know that even with, you know, what Derrick Henry and Josh Jacobs and Saquon are doing, Bijan is at the top of this list. All right, going to receiver conversation, first team all 22, Justin Jefferson, 89.9 season grade, 68.8 points. Amon-Ra St. Brown is second, 86.9 PFF grade, 66.9 points. And then Ja'Marr Chase is third. His PFF grade is actually a little lower, 76.5. I'm pretty sure that is. And 65.5 points. Do I have that right, Ray? Can you please check me on that? Because I feel like I probably wrote that down wrong. I'm thinking that's an 86.5.
That is probably an 86.5. It is an 86.5.
Yeah. Okay, cool. All right. So 86.5 for Ja'Marr Chase. So those guys are the top. They're the creme de la creme. We all know that, right? Justin Jefferson, Amon-Ra, and Ja'Marr. Those guys have just done it year over year. They're the young, next best talent in the league, but they are actually at the top at this point. AJ Brown just missed out at being in that group because he missed four games this year. And you don't realize how big of an effect that has when you're talking about like total points, right? It made a huge effect for AJ Brown, who was pretty far down the list, even though he had like a 91 season grade. And then the thing that stuck out to me is Brian Thomas Jr. We've talked about it a few times, but he's fifth on this list with a 79.8 season grade, 64.2 points. For a rookie, again, for rookie receiver to be fifth on this list, pretty amazing. I don't know if you saw like that tweet somebody put out that like all of those guys were basically born within like 100 miles of each other in Louisiana. Bizarre. Like, I don't know what kind of like nuclear, reactor went off and created all these.
You have to go to radiation for that. Okay. Yeah, sure.
Maybe. I mean, just made all these monstars. It's pretty sick.
Yeah, no. So in my notes, I literally just wrote down Brian Thomas Jr.'s name, and I said Chris is going to talk about him, so I'm not even going to put anything down for him. But yeah, big year for Brian Thomas Jr. We've kind of covered that on different episodes before, but again, boomer bust prospect who was a boom, even when everything around him wasn't necessarily great in Jacksonville. With Trevor Lawrence, he was a great fit and all that, but even beyond that, with the Lawrence injury and everything else that's gone on there, impressive stuff from Brian Thomas Jr. I did say before the season that it's quite possible that someone who passes on Brian Thomas Jr. in the draft could get fired as a result of that. So we'll see how that shakes out. But I went a little bit off course as something that stood out to me. And it's a name that I'm not necessarily super high on, but I think deserves a call out for this season. And that's Darnell Mooney. I think this was an offline podcast. I think this was actually probably during our recent trip to the college football playoff first round, where I think you mentioned every team has a Darnell Mooney, and every team pretty much does have a Darnell Mooney, right? You know,
everybody needs a Darnell Mooney.
Or needs, right. Most teams have one, but everyone needs one. Not going to get you 1,000, 1,100 yards or anything like that, maybe 600, 700 yards in an expanded season or whatever, but can kind of take the top off, athletic, deep threat, kind of makes some plays here or there to keep things going. But this season, he had a couple clunkers, which again, you expect from a no-brainer every week starter. But he finished as the 11th highest scoring receiver on the platform. Not necessarily the 11th highest graded because there's injuries at the position and such and you know, all that whole deal. But he didn't lose you your league. So Darnell Mooney, if he is in your lineup, at most is likely a wide receiver three. And he was available for you every single week, didn't lose you your game in any given week, had a couple of boom games in there, and was just someone who was just solid and dependable throughout the season. You always knew he was there and you could plug him in your lineup and focus on the rest of your lineup each and every week. So I'm just giving him a shout out because I think this was his best, most consistent year to date. And yeah, just shout out to Darnell Mooney. He doesn't ever get talked about with the other star receivers, and I think he deserved mention here. So went a little off road there, but good for Mooney.
I like the shout out. Yeah, we talked about it because every team does need that deep threat, right? Like it helps a team dramatically when you have a guy that could take the top off of a defense, play in and play out. And Mooney does that. I think, like, you know, RIP a little bit, but Henry Ruggs did that. And even though they he didn't pass away, did he? No, he didn't. No. Okay. But like, you know, RIP in terms of fantasy football.
Sure.
Yeah, like he did that and he didn't always grade fantastic, but like the impact that those kind of players make on a team when you get a good one is dramatic. And I think Xavier Worthy is a better player than that, but I think we could see him doing similar things. And then there's even a couple of receivers in this draft we'll get to when we're talking about it that are a little bit similar. All right, let's go to tight end. First on this list, no surprise, it's Brock Bowers, 85.8 grade, 35.8 points. That is, I believe, I'm double checking, he is the only rookie that is first for his position. So that just shows how special he is. Mark Andrews is second on the list with an 81.6 grade. Noah Gray is third with a 76.2. So this is probably the first position we're getting to where I think the overall grading at the position is down. And it's a pretty big drop off, right? We just talked about three receivers that all of them had over an 85 grade. Now we have one player on this list with an over 85, and it's just over 85. I think a couple other things, right? Like George Kittle, who was exceptional when he played, did miss some time. And I think he even missed the snap count once or twice. So he wasn't part of this top three. Travis Kelce was 11th on this list with a 69.2. I wonder if this is a sign of the tides kind of turning at the tight end position.
Yeah, no younger names starting to emerge. He didn't make the all 22 team, but Trey McBride, another young player here, I think finished in the top eight or so of scoring at the position on the platform. So you're starting to see some of those younger names emerge. I know you might have a theory about those young tight ends after big rookie years when it comes to Bowers anyway. But yeah, I think the tide is starting to turn a little bit there. You know, guys like Kittle, obviously Kelce aging out a bit. And there still isn't a ton of young talent in there to come up and replace them, right? You got a few guys holding steady like Mark Andrews. Jonnu Smith had an up year for him at age 29. Darnell Washington is more of a complete tight end. He's not going to really make the headlines or be the first name out of most people's mouths when talking about young tight ends because he's not a highlight reel through the air type of player. He's more of a sort of bully ball blocker type of guy. I think we've all seen the clip of him blocking someone out of the end zone, like, you know, 10 yards into the stands, basically, from a couple weeks ago. So I think the state of the position overall at tight end is actually pretty similar to how it's been in recent years in that it's not very deep, but it's just new names emerging at the top of the position as the older ones phase out and the younger guys sort of step in there. And pretty decent tight end class in, for this upcoming draft as well that maybe can help boost that. So, yeah, I think it's the more things change, the more things stay the same at tight end. So I have another name if you want me to throw out there at tight end too. Just kind of similar to the Darnell Mooney vein there, but Austin Hooper, top 12 in receiving and run blocking and the eighth overall graded tight end this season. Again, part of that goes to show you the state of tight end overall, because he's not a game breaker by any means, but kind of solid, dependable guy over there in New England. And a guy that could typically help you just win games in the NFL if you have other, you know, sort of game breaking talent around him, kind of like a glue type of player. Again, not a high end starter, but turned out to be a weekly starter for most people in all 22 as well at the tight end position. So just wanted to highlight Austin Hooper as well, because he definitely hasn't gotten much pub in the last couple of years.
Definitely hasn't. Awesome shout out. Should I talk about like my tight end theories? Should we get into it?
Do it. I can't get enough of your tight end theories. It's
yeah. And it's just be mindful. I am a terrible tight end scout apparently, because I like was not high in Brock Bowers. And other guys, I just like Sam Laporta, I was like not high on him last year. So I'm not good at this, right? But the theory is, and it's not really a theory, this is more like just proof is in the pudding. There's never been a tight end, a rookie tight end that's had 1,000 yards and then repeated that the next year. It's never happened. I think Evan Ingram did it his rookie year, didn't repeat. Kyle Pitts did it, didn't repeat. I mean, Sam Laporta didn't do it, but he had a tremendous rookie season and he's been pretty down from last year. Mike Ditka, I think, was like the other one. Like, there's not many that have done it.
All the way back, Mike Ditka. Okay, yes.
Going all the way back. There's only been a handful that have done it and none of them have repeated. And there's usually a pretty big regression. I think Sam Laporta is a great example of that because I think last year he might have finished tight end one or two. And I think this year he's like 15 or 16 in all 22. So that just goes to show you, like, even somebody that, like, last year we were, you know, everyone I spoke to was like, hey, Sam Laporta is probably the most valuable tight end in the game. Like, I don't think, like, people were like, I wouldn't trade him for a first round pick. And I was trying to be like, hey, maybe you should, or maybe like go get a first and a second if you think he's worth more than that. And somebody's willing to give it because it could be a while before he repeats that kind of success. Brock Bowers might be special though. Like, what I'm seeing Brock Bowers do is kind of different. He might be a receiver, right? Like, that might be the difference, is like, maybe he's just not a tight end. Maybe he's like a true receiver. And that's why, you know, he'll repeat success in a different way that others don't. And then the other part of like the tight end theory is like, tight ends typically don't reach their peak until they're like 27, which is typical for most positions. But, you know, you look at like young receivers come in the league, young running backs come in the league, and they usually come out like firing. So we get used to that. And then at tight end, we're like, we don't want to be as patient. But I think everybody besides Mark Andrew, if you look at like Travis Kelce, if you look up Gronk, if you look up, I don't know, name the tight end that's been successful.
Yeah, I think Njoku was 25 because he was in the league at like 20 years old. But yeah, guys like Njoku, it takes him like to year four or five.
Yeah, it takes him until after their rookie contract. So like when teams draft tight ends, they probably know they're not getting the most out of that guy until their second contract comes around. Austin Hooper is actually a funny example because him and Hunter Henry were from the same draft class. And there's kind of like that debate which one was better. And they both play for the Patriots now and they're both kind of like mid. But
gosh, you know, kind of cool. You called him mid, but okay, sure.
All right, let's go to tackle. We went too far down the rabbit hole. First on this list, no surprise, it's Penei Sewell, 87.7 PFF grade, 56.4 points. Zach Tom is second on this list with an 87.4 PFF grade, and Charles Cross is third, 83.3. I'm having like a happy dance, man, because like as bad as I am at scouting tight ends, I might be really good at scouting tackles because Charles Cross was my tackle one of that class, and he was pretty high up on my ranking. So like, you know, I won one there.
Yeah, congratulations. I have nothing to say like with those names, Zach Tom and Charles Cross. Yes, I also liked Charles Cross, but. You're the big Zach Tom guy. He's absolutely working out, so kudos to you for that. I will go a bit further down the list to another name that I've mentioned a ton of times and have been incredibly high on. Paris Johnson was tackle 13 before his injury with, again, massive improvement. Season grade of 60.1 as a rookie to 80.8 in year two. So massive bump up in performance for Paris Johnson at offensive tackle in Arizona as well. Doesn't make this list because he missed a couple games with injuries out the rest of the year. Nothing terribly major for his future, just not playing for the remainder of the season. And obviously the All-22 season is done. But it's another one who, again, you don't draft these rookies, or you don't draft rookies for what they're going to do for you their rookie year. That's Paris Johnson is the prime example of that, who was a below league average tackle in year one. And now you're starting to see the progression, the improvement in year two. And if that keeps going with his traits, he has the ceiling to be a superstar in year three and beyond. But year one to year two, especially for the linemen in particular on both sides of the ball, is really about elevating that floor. You get your feet wet in year one. You are facing grown men snap after snap for the first time. There's an adjustment there. Year two, you kind of raise your floor. And then year three is when you anticipate that breakout taking place. And then who are you really going to be for the remainder of your career? That's when that step happens. So we're starting to see that take hold with someone like Paris Johnson Jr. as the prime example there. So to shout out my guy as well. But yes, kudos to you, because those names at 2 and 3 in particular, you've been on for quite a while. So I'll give you your due.
Appreciate you. Paris Johnson was on my list to talk about, but I let you do it first. I knew that was going to come out of your mouth because there's the 13, 14, and 15 ranked tackles in the system right now in terms of points scored on the year are all interesting conversation points. And we've been pretty rough on Darnell Wright, but he sits there at 13 with 78.5 season grade. Like, he's been okay, right? In year two in that offense, with how bad some of the other pieces on that offensive line are, he actually hasn't been that bad. So, like, while I keep digging into him, props to him for finishing a pretty, you know, a pretty good sophomore year. Joe Alt is 14 on that list, who was my number one rookie offensive lineman, 78.5 grade as well. So he's right there with Darnell Wright, but as a rookie, right? And we know how difficult that is to do. So I do expect big things from Joe Alt next year. And then you already mentioned Paris Johnson Jr. He finished 15th on the list, but, you know, missed some time. Would have been a lot higher, I think. Let's go to guard. Chris Lindstrom, 93 season grade, 49.3 points. I want to shout him out because he is one of the biggest differentiators in terms of first player on the list to second player on the list at his position. So he had a 93.4 season grade. He had a 93 season grade. Quinn Meernes had an 86 season grade. So that is a 7-point dip in season grade from Chris Lindstrom to the next guy. That's incredibly impressive. Shows how special he is. So Quinn Meernes is 2 at 86. Kevin Dotson is 3rd at 82. So shout out to those guys. Great season from them. But Dominic Pooney, who we've talked about here and there on the podcast, 83.3 season grade as a rookie, but he missed a game. So he just fell under Kevin Dotson, 43.3 points in the system. Fantastic rookie season from Dominic Pooney. Like, you got to love that if you're San Francisco. They had Trent Williams and nothing for a long time. They finally draft a guy in the third round and they hit.
Yeah, he's a people mover. So I wrote down Pooney too and wanted to dig a bit deeper. So 6'5", 320, again, knockback blocker, just people moving type of guy. So just some metrics I wrote down for Pooney. It was the fourth highest graded run blocker in the 2024 season. 80.3 run block grade and zone runs, which is, I think, more than 2/3 of the actual run snaps that San Francisco ran. 81.9 in gaps games, which not nearly as many, at less than 100 of those this season for Pooney in San Francisco, but goes to show you that he is effective in the run game, period. It's not just zone, you know, no, it's both the athleticism and the power and the knockback. He brings it all in the ground game, which is primarily what you're looking for when it comes to a difference maker on the interior of the offensive line at guard. However, he can still stand to improve his pass blocking. And I think that's what's the most exciting thing about Dominic Pooney is he wasn't terrible as a pass blocker by any means, but, you know, 29 hurries given up on the season, 32 pressures. In true pass sets, where you will find that those grades are typically lower for offensive guards in particular, 54.3 pass blocking grade in those true pass sets. But again, in an offense like Kyle Shanahan's, where he can do it with the athleticism and the power first and foremost in the ground game, that's exactly what you're looking for on the interior. Young player can stand to improve in pass blocking as well. I think that's what's most exciting is that, again, he's got that upside to do so. If he makes that improvement, now you're looking at one of the top guards in the league. He already almost did it just by sort of being dragged there just by his performance on the ground. But if he becomes a more well-rounded player with his strength and ability, that's a heck of a find at guard for the 49ers and for whoever drafted him in all 22. So yeah, big ups to Dominic Pooney. A lot to be excited about there.
Absolutely. Center might be the most chalk position in all 22. Creed Humphrey, no doubt, finished first, and I'll shout him out as well. He had a 93.4 season grade, 30.5 points. Frank Ragnow, the next guy, had an 85.3. So that is an 8-point gap between the top tier guys, which is incredible, right? I think there's three positions that I'm going to talk about having a gap like that. And it was guard and center that were the biggest ones. So shout out to Creed Humphrey and Chris Lindstrom. But Frank Ragnow is number 2 with an 85.3. Tyler Linderbaum, number 3, 79.4. And I just wanted to do honorable mention here is Joe Tittman. He was fourth with a 75.7. Again, I think that's pretty chalk when we talked about the centers and how we ranked them in the preseason. It's not far off from what happened.
Yeah, and even guys like Aaron Brewer, who was, what, sixth, was another name that we had to watch. I just think it's interesting. The fourth highest scoring center, season grade 75.7, which is a good grade, but that's much lower than what you'll find of the fourth highest wide receiver, for example, or the fourth highest quarterback in the league. So it just goes to show you, again, the supply and demand at center. There's just not a lot of great centers out there. There's some intriguing young centers out there, Zach Frazier, Cooper Beebe, and so on from this previous draft class. But as a whole at the position, they're very hard to find. Great ones are very hard to find. So you have you literally have the top guy, a gap, the rest of the top guys, and then a larger gap. So it's a scarcity position. You got to get one early, or you might as well wait as long as you can, because there's not much difference thereafter once you miss out on the top tier or two at center. So that was the thing that really stood out to me, was again, just the lack of supply of good center. And before we go off, this is more of a general offensive line observation, I guess you could say, that sort of highlights, we talked about your tight end theory, but my philosophies as well. And I think you're in agreement here. I took a look at Michael Onwenu's snap counts, and in particular, the progression of where he lined up this season. And so he started out with four games at right tackle, then moved to right guard for two games, one more game back to right tackle, and then spent the remainder of the season at right guard. His season grades have decreased for four straight seasons now. Versatility is great, but when you don't allow a player to settle, they can't find a home. And if you don't allow them to find a home, then you are never going to reach their ceiling, and eventually they're going to lose that edge. And I fear that that's what's happening with Michael Onwenu. But just in general, as a note to when we're evaluating linemen, you know, guys like Elgton Jenkins, for example, and other versatile players who can bounce around between the edge and the interior of the offensive line, that's great, but eventually you really do need to find a home. And that's why I'm such a stickler for take your most talented players when you're team building and stick them at their best spot, and then you build around them. If you use your top guys to fill holes, you're just playing whack-a-mole and you're being reactive instead of proactive and having a plan. And I think we're seeing that with Michael Onwenu in particular, who started out as one of the most promising linemen in the league at either position, but moved around so much that now at either position, he's not nearly as effective as he once was. So cautionary tale there, one that stood out to me. I still think he can be great. I think Drake May will help, and I'm sure they're going to get some more reinforcements. I think this is a big offseason for the Patriots, but cautionary tale there. I think we've seen a decline in Onwenu's play because he has just not found a home.
If I was an owner of an NFL team, and you know, I get that you want these years where like the Patriots have $100 million to spend this offseason so they could go sign essentially whoever they want. But if I'm any team, right, and I understand you need to like save a little bit of room on your cap for, you know, midseason trades and stuff like that, or acquisitions midseason. But like every single season, I am adding as many guys as it takes and spending as much money as I can to bring in top talent. And I think that like it is a little bit, it's a little crappy that there are teams out there that like don't do that, right? It's just like you have a rookie quarterback like Drake May and they have cap space available. Right. And it's like, I understand like, you know, guys are going to leave and that's what creates the, you know, the 100 million, but I'm sure they have plenty of cap space that they could have added a few guys and made his life easier, made Michael Onwenu's life easier. And I did watch, Onwenu a couple games ago, and like, I do think he still has it. Like I watched him. There was a delayed stunt on one play. The guy comes around, defensive tier comes around. He drops the hammer of Thor on the guy's head. The guy goes down. And it was just like, it was perfect. It was just a perfect block. And he still has that. He's still capable of that. But can he play at one position long enough to like really solidify himself and just kind of fine tune his game? I don't know. I don't know if that'll ever happen, to your point. Let's go to the defensive side of the ball. Defensive interior, number one, first team, all 22, Chris Jones, 89.7 grade, 62.3 points. And right behind him, old man Cam Hayward, 89.7 on the season. And then Puna Ford, 89.7 on the season as well. So those guys were just about tied there. And then Tavondre Sweat, I just wanted to shout out Sweat. I've been doing it all season. He finished fifth in the All-22 platform. His season grade was a little bit lower, 75.4, but he played in, I believe, every game, 54.4 points. So shout out to Tavondre Sweat. Thank you for proving me right once again.
Yeah, my note says you're going to say Sweat, so don't write anything else there. I also took note of Puna Ford after two subpar years. Really stepped up this year in, I believe it's Jesse Minter's defense over there for the Chargers. Fifth in run defense and fifth overall grade-wise, I believe, at tackle. 5'11", 3'10". Just absolutely love that. That's just a trash can full of dirt in the right smack in the middle of the line there. I absolutely love it. No grades below 66, which is a slightly above average grade, right? No grades below 66 after week three. Nine of those 13 games after week three were grades over 70 for the week. So he absolutely found a home over there in Jesse Minter's defense after, again, just kind of bouncing around between Seattle and Buffalo. That's his role. He does it well. Just a stout, just presence in the middle there to stuff the run. Obviously a Harbaugh guy. I have so many opinions about Jim Harbaugh in general, but there's no doubt about it that as a football player, Puna Ford is a Jim Harbaugh guy through and through, and a not sexy name whatsoever, who was one of the best performers at a pretty crucial position all season for you in all 22. So absolutely shout out Puna Ford.
So Puna Ford is somebody that we're going to talk about a lot more because he actually is a free agent, and he might be one of those guys that, while he's had success at other places, it does feel like he found a home and he had the best season he's ever had in that defense there in Los Angeles. So we kind of would suggest that he, for his own sake, re-sign, but that might not be the case because he might end up getting a lot of money after the season he had. Okay, going to edge, no surprise, Myles Garrett is at the top of this list yet again, 92.5 season grade, 73.7 all 22 points. TJ Watt right behind him, 92.5 grade. And then the rookie, Jared Verse, 86.2. So I think that's a big surprise considering how strong the edge position is, right? We've talked about Aiden Hutchinson getting hurt, so take him away. But all of the other guys, Micah Parsons also got hurt a little bit this year. But there's plenty. Will Anderson, right? There's a bunch of really good edge talent in the NFL right now. Rashawn Gary. There's tons of guys we could say. But Jared Verse found his way into the third spot on this list. That is an incredible rookie season for an edge that wasn't even edge one in the draft, right? He went second. So he wasn't the consensus guy. That's fantastic for him.
Yeah, just a power player who just translated right away when he made the jump from rushing against college kids to grown men. So absolutely shout out to Jared Verse. Definitely exceeded my expectations for sure. I was high on him maybe long term, but not necessarily right away because I thought he'd have a bigger adjustment than he's shown to have. So absolutely just a fantastic rookie season for Jared Verse, which overshadowed a couple of other promising rookie seasons at different levels there. Even Leiatu Latu, just kind of a solid under the radar season. Not starter level in all 22 per se, but 72.6 overall on the season was just very steady, which is kind of what we expected of him overall as a player. But again, every rookie sort of has an adjustment to be made. And for him to grade out at a well above average level for his rookie season was phenomenal as well. We've talked about Chop Robinson really coming on late, averaging nearly a sack a week in the last third of the season or so, really kind of coming on there in Miami. But Jared Verse kind of just stood out in a class of his own in this rookie class. So shout out to him. And then I also wanted to note, of course, Nolan Smith. Edge 22, 11th in run defense, 35th in pass rush, okay? But in weeks 15 to 17, so for your all 22 playoff run, your big push for a championship, he was second among all edges in the NFL grade-wise overall. Four stops, 12 total pressures, two sacks, a forced fumble. So that's another young edge rusher that's really coming on late. And again, the environment there in Philadelphia is very good as well, but made a big improvement after year one. Remember, I mentioned it before, shoulder injury in the preseason, his rookie year, I think really held him back that a lot of people didn't talk enough about. And now he has a top 25 season at the position in year two. What's coming next in year three? I kind of mentioned that progression with Paris Johnson Jr. Same might apply to Nolan Smith as well.
As a Cowboy fan, I'm sure you're not super pumped, even though like Nolan Smith is a player you really liked in the draft. It's like, you know, it's the yeah. rival, but it wasn't just Nolan Smith. It was also N'Kobe Dean at linebacker who had like it. These guys are starting to pick it up, right? We're not done there. There's even a cornerback we're going to talk about later from Philly that like these guys are really playing well all of a sudden after Philadelphia was having a really hard time developing young talent. They're starting to do it. So, you know, whether you like to see that or not depends on which team you root for. But as us as scouts, you know, like it is nice to see that. All right, let's go to linebacker where Zach Bond is linebacker one, another Philly guy, 89.9 season grade, 38.9 points. Bobby Wagner, second, 87.4, 38.4 points. Fred Warner, 89.2. So Zach Bond, obviously a surprise this year, but his first year in Philly did tremendous. But the other two guys are basically just like chalk names that every year are going to be at the top of the list. Bobby Wagner at this point is essentially an ageless wonder. But the two names that I wanted to mention were the 2023 draft picks, third rounder Dion Henley and first rounder Jack Campbell, who finished fifth and sixth. So we're starting to get that young talent at linebacker that, you know, we haven't really had in a few years. So like to see that guys are starting to play well and come up. But after that, right, N'Kobe Dean, I mentioned he, I believe, was eighth or ninth on the list. Peyton Wilson, rookie linebacker, was, I think, 11th. Like there was a ton of young talent starting to play well in the NFL at linebacker. And it's something I really missed.
Yeah, I think it's still going to take quite a bit more good linebackers really coming up before I kind of move off of my position of just going by matchup outside of like those top three to four names. But it's a good start for sure. And I think what's interesting too is when you look at Zach Bond, a couple of arguments could be made. About a year ago, we were talking about Tremaine Edmonds and his quote-unquote breakout year, and he was the top-graded overall linebacker in coverage in the league, and how that is not necessarily sustainable. There's a lot of variability to coverage grading for linebackers. So if there's an anomaly and there's a standout coverage grade that's really driving that, that up season, it could be a buyer beware situation. And that's what you look at with Zach Bond in a sense. I mean, he's 27th overall run defense, 18th in pass rush, and then number one in coverage. So throughout, he's top 30 in what you want to see at a linebacker period at the position. So he's got a good floor established in his situation in Philadelphia. But I think the other thing to keep in mind is I think Bond and N'Kobe Dean in particular kind of play off of each other very well. We know about the front that Philadelphia has with Jalen Carter, Jordan Davis, and how, you know, Milton Williams, how all those pieces fit together there. But in particular, when it comes to the styles of linebackers, even N'Kobe Dean is fourth in pass rush, 14th in run defense, 32nd in coverage, which isn't terrible, but a stark difference. He's at 59.6 overall grade wise in coverage, whereas again, Zach Bond is over 90 and first overall in the league. So those two are playing off of each other very well. So if you have defined roles in a good situation, maybe Zach Bond isn't no brainer bona fide linebacker one in 2025 either, but he doesn't necessarily have to follow the path of, you know, big time, you know, LB1 type of year and then fall way down back to the pack like we saw with Tremaine Edmonds either. I think there's a solid, I don't even want to call it middle ground there, because I think he could still finish out as a top eight type of linebacker moving forward here, because he's got that floor and he's got that fit in Philadelphia. So just one thing I want to note, I thought it was really interesting looking at those two players, how well they fit and play off of each other. The pieces in Philadelphia just complement each other so well. Howie Roseman has done such a great job just building that entire roster. The rising tide has really lifted all boats over there in Philly. So bravo to them.
Yeah, unfortunately. Okay, let's go to cornerback where this is actually really embarrassing, Ray. I don't even know if I should say this on the podcast because it's not going to look good for any of us. Byron Murphy Jr. is first on this list with 75.2 season grade, 41.5 points. Cornerback was a disaster this year. The number one corner has a 75.2 season grade. He is a free agent in our main league. Nobody has him. He was the number one corner. And that just shows you what, like, week in and week out, the corner position is just such a, it's a mess, right? It's a crapshoot. You really don't know what you're going to get. Trent McDuffie is second on the list, 79.8 grade, 41.4 season points. And then another Eagle, Quinyon Mitchell, 74.5 season grade, 41.2 points. Again, it's really a mess of a position. I didn't have a ton of notes on it, except for, like, the way we talk about linebacker, where you almost don't want to take one and you want to just play at flyers every week. Considering Byron Murphy Jr. is a free agent in our league, I feel like that's kind of what you can do at corner two.
To be fair, I have Trent McDuffie, the cornerback two, with who's younger, with a more long-term projection there. But yes, it's becoming that. And maybe that's just the nature of those high variance type of positions, which I think what we're seeing is in the NFL, it is cornerback and linebacker more than anywhere else. I think safety is just not enough good players out there at the position. Whereas cornerback, again, just due to the nature of offense, it's really, really hard to be great every single week. Even Quinyon Mitchell, who's had a fantastic rookie season, just gave up a touchdown to Jalen Tolbert. He got mossed by Jalen Tolbert last weekend. So who had that on their bingo card? So yeah, corner is incredibly tough to evaluate, but there are some bright spots that you can find if you're looking for that sort of consistency, to where maybe they missed a couple games and overall scoring wise weren't great. But if you kind of dig hard enough, you have some consistent output when they are on the field. Case in point, in particular, I've mentioned his name once or twice here. I know he was kind of popular on Twitter in recent weeks, but Christian Benford had, I think he just missed this list because he missed a game or two this season, but had a fantastic year, second year in a row, I believe, with above average, above 80 grading there. Check me on that. Maybe it's above 75 or something. But in any event, only gave up 31 catches on the year for 279 yards in direct coverage, two touchdowns, two picks, 72.3 passer rating against. So kind of phenomenal metrics across the board there. But there's not many. There's not many after that. You really have to kind of go searching, and you'll find some good players that you could still trust, right? You had Christian Gonzalez kind of have a decent bounce back after injuring his shoulder, 76 grading in what's essentially a glorified rookie year for him, I would say. So there's promise there for consistently very good players. Obviously, Quinyon Mitchell's another.
Devin Witherspoon.
Yeah, you said it. I'm glad you did. I knew you were going to. But yes, Devin Witherspoon is another one, but there's not many, I think, is the point. Even someone like Jalen Johnson went from 90.8 2023 to 74. He had a 16-point drop year to year.
I just
pulled him up.
Who's our number one corner preseason?
I don't know. I filtered already. Who was it? Was it PS2?
No. Try again.
I hate when you make me play games in this
Sauce game. Gardner.
So look at his, your boy.
Look, yeah. He was 32nd. He landed 32nd this year in points scored. You'd want to talk about drop offs. 18.4 points.
Yeah, that's like, pretty, that's tough, the Jets, man. Stink. That's the stink of the Jets organization is starting to wear, you know, rub off on those young guys. You hate to see it. You actually do hate to see it.
Hate to see it. And it's one of those things where it's like, for him specifically, was it really just a case of the aura being in that locker room was just so bad that people are just like, nobody wants to play. Nobody wants to show up to work. Like, I hope not. And like, or could it be that he's just dealing with an injury and he's playing through it, and that's what we're seeing? I don't know, but like, he's one of my favorite players in the NFL. So like, to see him struggle, tough for me, man.
Corner. Yeah. Corner is the position you have to watch more closely than pretty much any other, because you can tough out an ankle at linebacker, at D tackle, and even safety, or, you know, whatever else. There's things you can play through. Like you always say, when you're missing that bit of juice or athleticism, because you're just a teeny bit hobbled here or there at corner, you get exposed. And that a lot of times is the case too. A lot of these guys are just banged up, and you'll see either variance throughout the year, or as the year goes on, you start to see more yellow and orange in those weekly outputs because these guys are just nicked up. And at corner, that gets exposed more than any other position out there on the field. I think that's a part of it too, but cornerback is quickly becoming another one where you have to pay more attention to it week over week, as opposed to drafting those high-end guys and just setting it and forgetting it week to week, because I think the amount of quote-unquote high-end guys we think are no-brainer weekly starters versus the actual true weekly high-end starters, no doubt about it, guys, I think there's a massive delta there to the downside, and we should probably start accounting for that.
Yeah, I think we really need to start digging into that this offseason a little bit more. All right, final position, safety. Little chalk, but some surprises there as well. So Kyle Hamilton finishes first, 89.9 season grade, 41.8 points. Kirby Joseph, I think he missed one game, 90.4 season grade, so higher than Hamilton, but only 41 points. And then Xavier McKinney, 88 season grade, 40 points. So those top three guys, we've been talking about, you know, Kirby Joseph in the year he had, but Xavier McKinney and Kyle Hamilton, basically the two best safeties in the league, look tremendous this year. So that's great to see. One thing that did surprise me a little bit this year is the safeties in the draft really performed differently than I thought they would. Tyler Newbin, you know, is a guy that I was very high on. I still have very high expectations for him. And I think he did okay considering what that New York Giants team kind of looked like. So I'm not too worried about him. But Javon Bullard on the Packers, I think, was the second safety taken in the draft. And he's looked rough, right? He's looked really, really kind of rough this year. Just hasn't really put the pieces together. And when you think about he's playing next to Xavier McKinney, you think that that would create kind of like an easy role for a young safety, but it hasn't been the case. And instead, rookie Evan Williams, who was, I think, a seventh round pick, has looked incredible. He's out due to injury right now. But like, it's just weird to me the way that it's kind of worked out this year. It's usually like if a team's taking a guy early second round, they know he's going to be like a contributor on the team. For that not to be the case for Bullard is definitely concerning for me.
I think the most concerning part about something like that too is Bullard's not necessarily or wasn't necessarily thought of as a super high upside player. He was more so he doesn't have the best frame. He's not necessarily the fastest guy with the most exceptional range, but he's just a tough, hard-nosed football player who's just going to be in the right place and just make the play if it's there and not hurt you. And that hasn't necessarily been the case. Now, he's a rookie, and yeah, again, we said at the start of the episode, you always couch it with he's a rookie and you don't draft him for what he's going to do as a rookie. But in terms of just overall performance, you want to see that floor really raise in year two because, 49.6 won't get it done. 89th overall at safety is not what they were looking for. Evan Williams did, in fact, look very good. So you at least sometimes that's just how the draft goes. You hit on that late pick and it kind of eases the pain of a potential early miss. And I'm by no means calling Bullard a miss this soon in his career. Just noting that, hey, you might have got a hit here late in day three with Williams. So it's something to keep an eye on. But you also have to know the profile of your players on your roster. Someone like Kalen Bullock was thought more of an athletic upside, super young player that might take some more time to develop. So while he's almost identical grade wise, safety 87, he had a couple splash plays, a couple splash weeks that make you go, okay, we'll see what we got here. You might be a little bit more encouraged by that, even though the end result is roughly the same production wise in year one. So it's more so just keep an eye on those guys and know the profile of your players, because some you might have to be a bit more patient with and others you probably expected more production from sooner. And I think Bullard falls into that bucket. So he's someone we should watch closely in year two.
Yeah. And there were a couple other rookie safeties that had some good, some bad. I mean, Kalen Bullock is a guy we've mentioned a few times. I liked him a lot in the preseason. I think you liked him somewhat as well. You know, he's been reliable. His grading isn't fantastic, but he is on the field 200 snaps more than basically any other rookie safety. So, he, you know, they're trusting him. Malik Mustafa has been actually pretty, pretty good across the board, who was a guy that I saw as more of a run defensive safety, like a thumper. 66 run defensive grade is pretty good. Pass rush grade of 72.8 on not so many snaps, but he's also been okay in coverage, you know, league average 60.6. But like to show how unbelievably odd the safety draft was, if you go back and listen to our Cam Kitchens takes, where we basically said he was undraftable, the dude has a 66.9 season grade on 459 snaps. Like, he's been good. Like, that's a good year for a rookie safety, especially considering, like, I just mentioned Javon Bullard, I think has like a 45 grade this year. So just kind of completely unexpected. But again, I think Cam Kitchens is an example of that. It's so important where they get drafted. Similar to the conversation we had a few weeks ago about Brian Thomas Jr., how we were both a little lower on him, but he goes to the perfect situation with the quarterback that needed that player. And it makes sense. I think, you know, again, Sean McVay team, well-coached team, well-coached defense, who they put a ton of draft assets into that defense. It shouldn't have been so surprising that he's successful, but we were really hard on that dude in the offseason.
Yeah, Miami, Florida State just doesn't mean anything to him, I guess. It just doesn't mean anything to him. You watch that tape and it clearly didn't. But I guess he gets more jazzed up to play the Arizona Cardinals when he's a member of the Rams than he does the Florida State Seminoles as a Miami Hurricane.
Dude, exactly. All right. Anybody else you wanted to touch on?
At safety, I also wrote down Justin Reed from the Chiefs. I think started out fairly slow here, but finished as the sixth highest scoring safety. And his season grade is 72.8. So top six player at the position. 72.8 overall. Again, scarce position, I think, was the main takeaway there. I like Reed, another part of that overall solid defense over there in Kansas City, but goes to show you, man, there are not many top safeties out there in the NFL today if your safety six is in the low 70s overall.
So, Ray, I'm going to put you on the spot now.
I hate this segment.
I'm going to put you on the spot. Are we starting our draft coverage next week?
I can't make any promises just yet. We could talk about the draft for sure,
but maybe not a film breakdown yet.
We might not be able to start our breakdowns next week.
Okay.
I have to look a bit more at that'll be this weekend's project.
Listen, I wanted to do different than what we did last year, which I think would be kind of cool, right? Is we started off with quarterbacks last year. And then we didn't talk about him again until like the end, right? Like basically until like draft day. There's too much that happens and there's too much that you get to learn about quarterbacks for that to be the only coverage of them. So what if we do a early draft ranking on quarterback to be like, hey, we're high level tape. You know, we're not going to show any tape on the podcast, but we do like a high level watch, you and I. We make some quick rankings, have some high level notes, and we just say, hey, as of January, whatever, 7th, whatever it's going to be next week, this is what we think of this draft class. You know, then throughout the offseason, we'll do, you know, film reviews. We'll go through it with the people on camera. We'll talk about them. And then towards the end of the, you know, before the draft, maybe sometime in March, we do like final rankings. How does that sound to you?
It's going to be a short list when we talk about quarterbacks. It's going to be a short list, but sure.
Jeez, dude, you're
down for that. I'm down for whatever method, structure, schedule, format we want to talk about draft. I'm down for whatever. I'm down for it. It's draft talk period. And that's the best time of year. So this is the most wonderful time of year, although it is January 2nd and people are kind of getting back to the office and probably don't feel that way. But the best time of year is absolutely draft talk. So draft season, I'm all about it. Whatever format you want, we'll give it to the people. I'm just down to talk about it.
Cool, man. Me too. But all right, guys, everyone, congratulations again on winning. All you winners out there, congratulations. Also, congratulations to the players that made the all 22 list of top players of the year, the first team all 22. And then everybody, thank you again. Please give us a follow on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and Twitter at @all22_PFF, and give us a review wherever you watch or listen to your podcast, and have a great day. I'm a ghost.